I was detached from all my friends. They were very supportive. It was like, no big deal, you know, so you're gay, so what? They wanted me to go with them. Instead, I was pulled out of my unit and then processed very quickly for discharge.
Any Arab driver had access to the roads that we traveled, and without my ammunition, I was defenseless. They let me keep my rifle, but it's no good without ammunition.
Where are the weapons of health care and cures we need to save the hundreds of thousands of us who are infected with HIV? We must speak.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Poland's PM denies homophobia, an international conference galls Ghana's government, and everything old is news again. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 2nd, 2006. Polish Prime Minister Jarosław Kaczynski remarkably claimed this week that there is no homophobia in his country, and that gays and lesbians are well treated there. Following a meeting with European Commission President José Manuel Barroso in Brussels, Kaczynski responded to several reporters' questions on the subject, saying, "Don't believe the myth of a homophobic, xenophobic Poland." He invited journalists to go to Poland to see for themselves. "You can go to clubs, you can ask around, you will not see anything bad," he said. According to Kaczynski, there are gay politicians in very high political positions in his country. That might shock Polish LGBT activists. No federally elected representative in Kaczynski's government is out. "For decades, it has been known about many prominent people. They are homosexuals," he said, "and it has never been a problem. What we have now in Poland are gay clubs, gay literature, gay press. This is all functioning normally." Kaczynski's twin brother Lech was elected president last October in a campaign marked by frequent homophobic slurs, prompting the European Union to issue a stern warning to the government not to limit the rights of gays and lesbians. Lech had banned LGBT pride parades in 2004 and 2005 when he was mayor of Warsaw. A parade permit was issued this year under a new mayor, but more than 1,000 skinheads and ultranationalists lined the route throwing eggs and bottles. Pride marchers in Krakow were similarly attacked. It was the Polish PM's first visit to Brussels since taking office 2 months ago, designed in part to ease concerns about the treatment of LGBT people in his country, and to address other issues involving Poland's membership in the European Union. Despite Kaczynski's assurances that Poland's sexual minorities are not being mistreated, LGBT members of the European Parliament say the record shows otherwise.
A pride parade in Jerusalem, this time planned for September 21st, is once again being opposed by authorities, who say they will not allow the event to be held so close to the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Organizers from the Jerusalem Open House had scheduled the parade during Jerusalem's World Pride Festival in August, but were denied a permit, which they didn't contest after hostilities broke out in southern Lebanon. Soon after Open House announced its intention to hold the parade on September 21st, Jerusalem police denied a permit, but they said they might consider other dates for it. Pride parades have been held in the city since 2002 and were relatively peaceful until last year, when an ultra-Orthodox man claiming guidance from God stabbed three people and was subsequently charged with attempted murder. Open House director Haggai Elad told Ynet this week that his group intends to hold the parade on September 21st as planned. In May, the Jerusalem District Court ruled that it's illegal for the municipality to discriminate against the LGBT community, and Elad warned that, "We will not hesitate to petition the court."
Gays and lesbians have been organizing in the small African nation of Ghana, but the government has banned what was reportedly an international LGBT conference scheduled there this month. "During some of the small programs we organize in Accra, we get about 400 to 500 gays attending," Prince MacDonald, the president of the Gay and Lesbian Association of Ghana, told a local radio station last week. "And when we have big programs, we get thousands of people coming from other regions." Ghana's information minister, Kwamena Bartels, said this week that the government became aware of an international LGBT conference, reportedly organized by local activists and to have included people from throughout Africa, when clergy brought it to his attention. The BBC reported it's been difficult to establish precisely who was organizing the conference at the Accra International Conference Center. But Bartels said it would not be permitted because homosexuality is punishable by imprisonment in his country. Government does not condone any such activity which violently offends the culture, morality, and heritage of the entire people of Ghana, Bartels told the Ghana News Agency, saying that the government wants to make it absolutely clear that it shall not permit the proposed conference anywhere in Ghana. Bartels warned that disciplinary action would be taken if anyone was found to have broken the law. Managers of the International Conference Center have denied that such a conference was due to take place there.
The final defendant in the notoriously brutal murder of Northern California transgender teen Gwen Araujo heard his sentence this week. 23-year-old Jaron Nabors will spend up to 11 years in prison. He pleaded guilty to voluntary manslaughter early in the case and showed authorities where the teen's body was buried. 17-year-old Gwen Araujo was viciously beaten, tied up, and strangled in October 2002 after men she'd had sexual encounters with learned she was biologically male. Two men were sentenced to 15 years to life in prison after being convicted of second-degree murder, while another pleaded no contest to manslaughter and received a 6-year prison sentence.
The Arizona Supreme Court this week upheld a proposed constitutional amendment set for the November 7th ballot that would not only ban same-gender marriage but also domestic partnerships in the state. The justices, upholding a lower court ruling, rejected arguments that the measure violates Arizona's single-subject rule for ballot initiatives. The advocacy group Arizona Together and five heterosexual couples, most of them elderly, had sued to keep the measure off the ballot. Several Arizona localities, including Phoenix, Tucson, Tempe, and Pima County, offer domestic partnerships. Same-gender couples have not been the only ones signing up. They become popular among seniors who want to keep health benefits that would be jeopardized by remarriage. The ballot measure has been endorsed by all three of Arizona's Catholic bishops, as well as Republican Senator and possible 2008 presidential candidate John McCain, who defended his stance last year by saying that the measure would allow the people of Arizona to decide on the definition of marriage. A poll of the state's registered voters released this week by a TV station in Tempe indicated growing opposition to the measure, but it's too soon to predict the November outcome.
Openly lesbian candidate Patricia Todd has been reinstated as the Democratic Party's candidate to represent Birmingham's District 54 in the Alabama legislature. The party executive committee voted 95-87 this week to reject an earlier subcommittee ruling that disqualified Todd, as well as her runoff election opponent Gaynell Hendricks, because both had violated a party rule requiring candidates to file a campaign finance disclosure report with the party chairperson. Party chairperson Joe Turnham noted that no candidate has filed one since 1988. The conflict appeared to turn more on the race of the candidates than on sexual orientation. Alabama Democratic Party Executive Committee Vice Chairperson Joe Reed, a powerful black politician, had written a letter to African American leaders in Jefferson County before the July 18th runoff election, asking them to support Hendricks, who is black, so that a black person would be elected from the majority black district. Todd, who is white, defeated Hendricks by 59 votes. There's no Republican candidate in the district race, which means that Todd will likely become Alabama's first openly gay or lesbian state legislator.
The Uniformed Services University, a U.S. Department of Defense medical, nursing, and graduate school, has its first openly gay man as student council president. Patrick M. High was elected by a student body that includes uniformed personnel in the armed forces. Most who graduate there take public health jobs with the government. High served 9 years in the Illinois Army National Guard and is currently a Ph.D. candidate at the university. His election, says C. Dixon Osborne of the queer advocacy group Service Members Legal Defense Network, is just the latest in a series of signs that those serving in our armed forces are ready to welcome openly gay colleagues. A study conducted last year for his group concluded that the U.S. military could attract as many as 41,000 new recruits if gays and lesbians were able to be open about their sexual orientation. And a recent poll by the Annenberg Foundation found that 50% of junior enlisted personnel now favor allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly. Meanwhile, a heterosexual West Point graduate received a prestigious academic award last month for his thesis opposing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the U.S. ban on lesbian, gay, and bisexual service members. And young gay and lesbian college students have been trying to enlist at military recruitment centers across the country as part of a national protest by the non-denominational group Soul Force, which organized demonstrations earlier this year at college campuses that reject lesbi-gay students. But the top two veterans organizations in the U.S., the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars, this week passed motions supporting a continuation of the policy. A bipartisan coalition of about 120 Congress members supports legislation to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That measure is going nowhere fast, however.
But finally, it appears that Argentina will be repealing a law that makes it a crime for members of the military to engage in homosexual acts. The national government intends to abolish the entire military justice code and create a new armed forces justice system. Among scores of changes, the new laws will allow service by openly lesbian or gay personnel. Colonel Judge Advocate Manuel Lozano, a member of the legal commission designing the new system, told reporters that it's a matter of people's private lives. The ban was nonsense.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 2nd, 2006. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Rick Watts.
Here's an update to the Jerusalem Pride story. The police had denied a permit for the September 21st march because it's the day before Rosh Hashanah. Organizers are now proposing several earlier dates before the Jewish high holidays. We'll have further developments next time on This Way Out. So you don't want to miss a week of This Way Out's global news or great music by openly LGBT artists, hearing about a new movie even before the buzz begins, getting on-scene coverage of important news as it's happening, or queer historic sounds from our archives? The answer is a subscription to This Way Out. You can get our programs on great-sounding CDs or audio cassettes delivered right into your mailbox and for less than a newspaper subscription. For easy how-to information, simply email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us for more information at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. With troops committed to conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, and with an admitted shortage of fresh recruits, the U.S. military continues to discharge lesbians and gays at the rate of two a day, according to the Service Members Legal Defense Network. Many of these booted soldiers are highly trained experts with skills vital to the Bush administration's so-called war on terror. There may be a new, more dangerous show on the world stage now, but these discharges are a rerun of the experiences of lesbian armed forces personnel during the first Iraq war, conducted by the first George Bush. Pentagon policy at that time completely banned gay or lesbian military service. More than a decade after a fledgling Democratic President Bill Clinton and an entrenched Republican Congress instituted the allegedly more compassionate Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, there remain common threads in the stories of service members then and now. This Way Out carried the voices of gays and lesbians involved in the Gulf War during 1991, but many of these stories could be last week's news. As the year began, the United States, technically the United Nations, was just days away from beginning its annihilation of Iraq in the Gulf War.
I'm ready to serve my country and go with my unit to the Persian Gulf. When I get back, I don't want to be discharged because of the fact that I'm a lesbian.
The war in the Middle East has also become a battleground for lesbians and gays in the U.S. military. Army Specialist Donna Lynn Jackson wrote to her commanding officer earlier this month saying, "I am an open lesbian, and I wish to be deployed as such."
I was detached from all my friends. They were very supportive. It was like, no big deal, you know, so you're gay. So what? They wanted me to go with them. Instead, I was pulled out of my unit and attached to this other unit and then processed very quickly for discharge.
The San Francisco Chronicle reported several reservists came out to their commanders and were told they would still be sent to Saudi Arabia, even though they might face discharge on their return.
Brigadier General M.G. Vergamini, the Defense Department's Director for Manpower and Personnel, has called those media reports, quote, "preposterous and categorically untrue." The policy that homosexuality is incompatible with military service remains in effect, period.
February 9th through 18th marked the fourth annual national conference of the Black, Gay, and Lesbian Leadership Forum, held this year in Los Angeles. Phil Wilson, the co-chair, opened the conference.
President Bush vetoes the 1990 Civil Rights Bill and bombs Baghdad in the name of democracy, we must speak. Our government spends $1 billion a day to kill people. But some of us have been in a war for a long time. We have been in a war against a monster more insipid, more dangerous than Saddam Hussein will ever be. This monster lives in our bodies. It is called HIV. Where are the Patriot missiles that will destroy this enemy? Where are the scuds of drugs and treatments we need to fight this enemy? Where are the weapons of health care and cures we need to save the hundreds of thousands of us who are infected with HIV? We must speak.
This is the CBS Evening News. Dan Rather reporting. Good evening. We're going to take a break for a commercial right now.
AIDS activists disrupted national TV coverage of the Persian Gulf War to protest the lack of media coverage of AIDS. Other protesters interrupted taping of the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour, some chaining themselves to the desk.
The status of lesbians and gays in the United States Armed Forces remains controversial as fighting in the Gulf enters its second month. Dozens of gays and lesbians in uniform are telling advocacy groups that, despite denials from the military, a so-called stop-loss policy is operating, which delays what would otherwise be immediate discharges until the war is over.
Between 300,000 and 500,000 people marched for peace on both coasts of the United States. In Washington, D.C., about 250,000 filled the Capitol Mall. And in San Francisco, AIDS quilt organizer Cleve Jones was one of the featured speakers.
President Bush has given us a lot of reasons for fighting this war as the administration casts about for new ways to market Operation Desert Storm. A war to save our cities. A war to conquer disease. A war to build schools and rescue our children from despair. A war for clean air and water. A war against bigotry and ignorance. A war for parks and playgrounds and homes. These are the wars worth fighting. The wars are here at home in America. No blood for oil. Bring the troops home.
While most of the troops returning home from the Persian Gulf War were met with parades and celebrations, former United States Marine Corporal Eric E. Barker, the model Marine, receiving high grades for proficiency and conduct, as well as high praise for energy and self-motivation, was being hustled out of the Corps. Barker recounted how, while serving his country in the Saudi Arabian desert, he was accused by another Marine of having committed the crime of sodomy. His commanding officer fired him from his job and stripped him of his ammunition.
There's like a half a mile of open roads that we had to walk to get from the camp to the headquarters building. And anyone, any Arab driver, had access to the roads that we traveled to get over there. And without my ammunition, I was defenseless. They let me keep my rifle, but it's no good without ammunition.
Barker accepted a general discharge, which is less than the unconditional honorable discharge given to other troops returning from the Persian Gulf War theater. Because the Marines refused to allow testimony on his behalf, Barker waived his right to what he believed would be an unfair hearing. Now attending college in Los Angeles, he must face the prospect of job hunting with a discharge document which contains homosexuality admission as the reason for involuntary separation from the Marine Corps. For Barker, as well as for tens of thousands of others, that means either hiding years of military service from prospective employers or closing himself to many job opportunities in a social arena where discrimination against homosexuals is still rampant.
I was sitting in the foxhole, dodging all the shrapnel, waiting for my time to come. When along came a general with word from the Capitol, told me that I'd have to run. So I asked, what's the problem? General said, son, I've heard you're a queer. So you better run along now, I didn't like you anyhow, get your butt out of here. Well, I've been doing a good job, my record compares to none. It's okay if I kill a man, but I better not get caught loving one. And the moral of the story is to fight for love and glory, never mind if you're straight or gay. But I'm proud to be queer, that's the reason that I'm here, fighting for freedom in the USA.
I think that a person's sexual orientation should not be a bar to military service.
Lawrence Korb, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower under President Reagan from 1981 to 1985, and an advisor to the current Bush administration, told the Human Rights Campaign Fund, "You will win. The only question is when."
The research shows that people who are homosexuals are no greater security risk than heterosexuals, and that a person's orientation is not necessarily related to his or her conduct.
He believes President Bush is too influenced by right-wing Republicans to support a policy change, but that court decisions or public pressure will bring it about. He said, "Once you hit the right buttons, the resistance will crumble, and people will say, 'Why were we so worried about this?'"
A major survey indicates that an impressive majority of U.S. citizens of every demographic and political stripe disagree with the current policy of discharging gays and lesbians from the military. When asked, should the government discharge a person just because he or she is homosexual? 81% of the respondents said no. The results of the professionally conducted telephone poll by Penn and Schoen Associates were announced by the Human Rights Campaign Fund. Executive Director Tim McFeely.
I think 81% is a very large number. Any politician would give his or her eye teeth for that kind of approval rating. It's estimated that about 1,500 people are discharged for this purpose every year. And when you think about the money that's spent training those 1,500 people and how much money is spent in processing the discharge, we're talking about spending millions of taxpayers' dollars on this policy.
In response to questioning by openly gay Congressman Barney Frank, Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney suggested he disagrees with the military's policy that homosexuals present a security risk.
The defense secretary stressed he inherited rather than formulated the military's policy on homosexuals. Dick Cheney told a House panel that the policy for many years is that a gay lifestyle is incompatible with military service.
There have been times in the past when it's been generated on the notion that somehow there was a security risk involved, although I must say I think that's a bit of an old chestnut.
I think that racism, sexism, and homophobia are like three strands in a rope that's placed where women, people of color, and gay men and lesbians are just not allowed to go. It says white men allowed, that's it.
After 5 years of waiting, U.S. Army Captain Dusty Pruitt will finally have her day in court. Pruitt was honorably discharged by the Army in 1986, 3 years after revealing her lesbianism in an interview with the Los Angeles Times. She's mounted a legal challenge to be reinstated, and the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled August 19th that the military must prove a rational basis for its 48-year-old ban on gay and lesbian personnel. The court also asserted it would reject the military's traditional tactic of citing existing anti-gay prejudice within its ranks as a rationale for continuing the policy.
There are seven reasons why gay men and lesbians supposedly cannot serve. Six of those have to do with the prejudice of others, and one has to do with the fact that gay men and lesbians are supposedly a greater security risk. We feel that if the Army has to put on a defense, their own studies will bear out that gay men and lesbians are not in any way a higher security risk than anybody else. Gay men and lesbians are the last legal group of individuals that one can persecute, and people are about doing that with all their might.
Citing a concern over the spread of AIDS, a U.S. federal judge upheld the ban on gays and lesbians in the military.
U.S. District Judge Oliver Gash ruled that the armed forces have the right to ban homosexuals because they pose a high risk of transmitting AIDS to other soldiers. The Pentagon did not request such a ruling. They had asked that the ban on homosexuals be upheld for legal, not medical reasons. Judge Gash turned down a request by Joseph Stephan to reinstate him into the Navy. Stephan was forced to resign from the Naval Academy just before graduation in 1987 when his officers learned of his sexual orientation. Three times during the legal proceedings, Judge Gash referred to Stephan as a homo. Gregory King of the Human Rights Campaign Fund says Gash's ruling is based on bigotry and ignorance.
This is really a serious miscarriage and reflects the lack of information that's held by even intelligent members of our legal profession.
Stephan's attorneys say they'll appeal the judge's ruling. The Pentagon says it will have no comment on the ruling until all appeals are ended.
Together we can find.
Those reports from 1991 featured Gulf War-era service members. Army Captain Dusty Pruitt's 12-year legal battle was resolved in 1995 through a ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which the U.S. Supreme Court refused to review. She was reinstated, promoted to major, and then retired from the Army Reserves. Since 1993, it's been the policy of the U.S. military that gays and lesbians can serve only on the condition that they remain in the closet. Legislation to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell currently remains on the congressional back burner. Then, as now, and while supporting the rights of those who choose to serve, several queer advocacy organizations and many LGBT people around the world are also taking part in the movement opposing the U.S.'s current military incursions. Our thanks to 1991-era This Way Out reporters Cindy Friedman, Mark Saccomano, Mary Van Clay, Joey Flyer, Bert Weiland, Dave Buell, and Pacifica Radio News reporters Thelma Lebrecht and Matt Binder for their contributions to this 15 Years On review. Additional thanks to Dave Buell for his original digital mastering. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Tanya Kane Perry, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, and Graham Underhill contributed program material. Graham Nash, Martin F. Swinger, and Michael Callan performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. Click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable contributions from you, our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special LGBT movie, music, and history CD thank you gifts. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on KRCL, Salt Lake City, Utah, WRIR, Richmond, Virginia, CKDU, Halifax, Nova Scotia, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're all going to stay tuned.